This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here, back with our first line formation, if you will. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm throwing shade at Edward Fraser, but you know, this is the usual gang. It's me, Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. He's a poser. and we obviously, as promised, are going to preview the Central Division today. But before we do that, we can't not talk about the Max Pacioretty trade that I believe dropped at 1:08 a.m. Eastern time. Wow. The deal finally went down. Max Pacioretty goes to the Vegas Golden Knights. The Habs get Thomas Tatar, prospect Nick Suzuki, 2019 second-round pick. I guess the question we have to ask right off the top is, who won this trade?
Well, I mean, considering the spot that Montreal was in before they made this trade, basically washing their hands of Max Pacioretty, wanting nothing to do with him and not wanting to re-sign a guy who had made it very, very clear, very publicly that he wanted to stay, and this was becoming such a public relations nightmare for them. I think actually the return was pretty good. In Nick Suzuki, they got a guy who's coming off 96 and 100 points the last 2 years in the Ontario Hockey League, a really, really good prospect. A guy who, based on talent alone, probably could step in and play on this team next year, especially for a team that's looking for some scoring. I'm not sure that would be the right move for him. But I think he's a guy that could come in and play. I look at it from Vegas's side, and I'm actually pretty impressed that George McPhee, I mean, when he took over the Vegas Golden Knights, he said the one great thing about having this team is you're starting with a clean slate, right? There's no bad contracts, none of the stuff that's hanging over, no headaches in that respect. Well, he picked up a really bad contract when he picked up Thomas Tatar's contract, and I'm actually pretty impressed that he was able to flip that contract off to somebody else. Tatar will have a chance to, again, be a guy that could revitalize himself in Montreal. They need scoring. They need somebody who can give them some pop, and maybe he's the kind of guy that can do that. Based on his play down the stretch with Vegas and the fact that he couldn't even get in the lineup by the Stanley Cup final, I'm not sure that's the case, but hopefully you have a motivated guy. But I think it's one of those ones that's good for both teams. I mean, Montreal had to make this trade. Pacioretty had put the deadline down of the regular season. There was no way they could go into the season with him basically being a rental for somebody. So they had to get some return. They got a good young player. They got a second round pick. That'll be whatever it is. But I think given the circumstances, I think it was a pretty good deal for Montreal and a good deal for Vegas.
Yeah, I agree. When I saw it, I was like, oh, good for Bergevin. He didn't lose the trade. And honestly, Nick Suzuki, very good young prospect, super smart, drives possession. As you said, Ken, he's put up a lot of offense. If he goes back to the Owen Sound attack, he would be one of my favorites to lead the league in scoring this year. And as you point out, based on Montreal's depth chart, he could step right in. Now, is it worth it for him to go back, play in the World Juniors and, dominate? Yeah. He wants to win a title. I actually just spoke with him the other week. He wants to win a title in Owen Sound. Mm. So he has those goals.
He could maybe do both, though. Like, maybe he plays up until, late November or something.
The nine-game mark.
Or even beyond the nine-game mark. I don't know that that's really something that's really foremost on everybody's mind, but say he plays 15, 16, 20 games or whatever up to Christmas, goes to the World Juniors, and then goes back to Owen Sound and tears it up there for a year. I guess my question, Ryan, is do you see him project him at the NHL level as a center or a winger?
I do see him as a center, but probably a second-line center. Yeah. Now, given Montreal's depth chart, they kind of have, because Ryan Poehling, I would say, is also a second-line center, but a completely different kind of second-line center.
Right.
With Jesperi Kotkaniemi, their hope is he could be a number one center, but that's going to be years down the road for him to actually be able to fill that role. So I think Suzuki, he could be your number one center, but you wouldn't be like a contender in that regard. Like, he would best be in that second line role where he could really make some hay and, you know, really get some good matchups. And I mean, he can do a lot out there, but I don't know if he, you know, just based on his frame and everything, if he can be that dominant NHL center.
He's not a huge guy. He's like 5'11", whatever.
Yeah,
He's probably
like,
got some weight to put on.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess the question is you know, I mean, Montreal, that, you know, center's been the black hole of death and will continue to be one for probably the short term at the very least.
Certainly.
But you look long term and you go, okay, so what does a, you know, a center ice core of Kotkaniemi, Poehling and Suzuki, how does that stack up long term against, you know, what other teams are doing?
And, yeah,
right. You know, have they finally, at least in the long term, have they finally addressed that? They drafted like 7 centers in the last draft. So have they finally, I guess the question is, have they finally put that to bed for a long term sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm not sure they quite have, just because you kind of want that sure thing. You know, like when the Sabres got Eichel, when the Leafs got Matthews, when the Oilers got McDavid, you could say like, okay, that's your number one center for the next decade. With this, there's a little more wiggle room where I think things have to break a certain way, guys have to develop a certain way. You know, if Montreal wins the draft lottery and gets Jack Hughes, then yeah, they're set.
That changes everything.
Sure. That changes everything, because now you can slot guys in. It's like, maybe Suzuki's on the wing, maybe Kotkaniemi's on the wing, because that's where he played all of last year back in Finland. So then you have more options. Right now, I think they're certainly in a better place than they were yesterday, but nothing is for sure.
I see kind of a Ryan O'Reilly type ceiling for Nick Suzuki, right? A guy that would be an ideal number two center because he does things well at either end of the ice. But like you said, you don't want O'Reilly to be your number one center, then your team would be in trouble. But like he is in St. Louis now, pretty nice fit as a number two. I think what people need to understand about Montreal too is, if they're complaining about the return, which I think some people seem to be on Twitter, yes, Max Pacioretty will likely sign an extension with Vegas, as the deal was reportedly, as you said before this podcast, Ken, contingent on that. But from Montreal's perspective, he was an expiring contract because you know Pacioretty was not coming back.
Right.
So considering that, I think the return is pretty decent. And I think it speaks volumes for Vegas that this team is going for it. And they traded one of their 3 best prospects. They had that great 2017 draft where they got Glass and Brännström as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a lot to give up. But it sends to me a pretty strong message that they believe what they did last year and that they think they can win a Pacific division that is pretty wide open, in my opinion, and adding Pacioretty, you got leadership, you get more goal-scoring skill. Suddenly swapping out James Neal and David Perron and bringing in Paul Stastny at center, of course,
right,
and Pacioretty, maybe that's actually an upgrade over what they lost.
Yeah.
So suddenly it makes me rethink Vegas' position in that division for this coming season.
Yeah, good point.
And speaking of this coming season, we're going to preview the Central Division now. As we've done last week with the Atlantic, we're going to start at the bottom. And this feels like the Twilight Zone compared to what we used to do in previews a few years ago. But the Chicago Blackhawks, to me, not only are they at the bottom, they're at the bottom by a mile. I think there's a significant gap between even the 6th place team and Chicago, and I know Chicago fans might not like that, but hey, look at the standings last year. And last year you had Corey Crawford for half a season. This year it's still possible you get no Corey Crawford. That head injury is very scary, career threatening. We don't know when he's going to be ready. And Cam Ward is, I don't know if he's a safety net because he was terrible. He was probably the worst goaltender rate stat wise. He and Scott Darling were neck and neck. Worst goalies in the league last year. So I don't think Chicago's actually repaired its goaltending without Corey Crawford, but what do you guys think? Are they as bad as most people are now projecting them to be?
Well, if you mean most people, by us?
I think non-Blackhawks fans.
They are. I mean, we had a podcast a couple of weeks ago where we had our crazy predictions, and mine was that Chicago was going to finish 31st overall, and they were going to win the lottery and get Jack Hughes and start the rebuild. And I really think that's possible. I mean, Jonathan Toews can talk all he wants about rededicating himself to the game and what he wants to do, but I just don't know that it's there anymore. I mean, there's to me, he's a poster boy for kind of the diminishing asset as a player. You know, I just don't know that there's a big revival left in him, and defensively they're really, really suspect and really long in the tooth. You know, we talked about the goaltending. I mean, they're just It's weird. I mean, this was the scariest team in the league a couple of years ago, and I just don't see anything on this team that scares anybody anymore.
Yeah, maybe Patrick Kane. That would be kind of the only big-time threat. I think, I mean, this is fine for Chicago. It had to happen eventually. And, you know, I was in Traverse City on the weekend for the big prospects tournament there. Chicago was one of the teams. And it was funny talking to, you know, other people that were sort of regulars of the tournament, where in past years, the Blackhawks team was always quote-unquote bad because they never had any high-end prospects. They would bring in a lot of free agents. They would have a couple of their own guys, but they didn't really do too well. Last year, they won the tournament. This year, in the games that I saw, they were pretty good. You had Adam Boqvist, who is going to play for the London Knights this year, but he was their first rounder. You know, Nicholas Beaudin looked really good on a pairing with Boqvist. He was another first rounder this year. Henry Jokiharju looked nice on the back end as well. He was a first rounder before that. And then you had a couple of guys that are going to get time this year. Dylan Sakura looked really nice up front. Victor Aishel as well, who they got in the Ryan Hartman trade from Nashville. That's the kind of guy where this is the season where you see what he can do. You know, is he a center at the NHL level? Do you put him on wing? You know, can he use his size? How can he stack up against the big boys? I think there are a couple of other players that will continue to grow, and you let them have that space because it's not your year. And as you said, Matt, with Corey Crawford and his head, I mean, you might get 60 games out of him, you might get 6. Mm-hmm. You have no idea. And they don't really have much goaltending depth behind Cam Ward. And as you pointed out, Cam Ward, not the same Cam Ward that won the Stanley Cup with the Carolina Hurricanes all those years ago.
Hasn't been for a while.
Man. Hasn't been for a while. Mm-hmm. Carolina kept bringing him back because their other options kept getting worse. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the year where Chicago just kind of like lets the kids play, let them develop, and expectations in terms of standings are quite low. You got the leadership there. You know, Keith is still there. Taves is still there. Seabrook's still there. So it'll be a good room. But in terms of wins and losses, I think they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, and for Blackhawks fans out there, hopefully you understand, that's perfectly okay. You got your 3 Stanley Cups, and Stan Bowman had a very distinct roster model, very top-heavy. You pay huge money to the big stars. You keep replacing them with depth. But the problem is, under that model, when the big stars start to age out, so we've seen it already with Seabrook, starting with Taves now, maybe Keith soon, he's in his mid-30s, then when those guys aren't elite anymore, then the whole thing collapses.
Yeah.
So Pittsburgh Penguins fans, enjoy it while you have it, because this is going to happen to the Penguins. It's going to be in a couple more years, because you still have good years left of Crosby and Malkin, but when their games start to age out, the Penguins, they've had one first-round pick in the last 5 years, and they traded it. It was Kasperi Kapanen.
Mm.
They have, you know, they're in go-for-broke mode, just like Chicago has been, and I think Chicago now is what the Penguins are going to be in maybe 3-4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So just remember this, Penguins fans, enjoy it, because the bottom will fall out, because you cannot stop Sidney Crosby from aging someday. Yeah. It'll happen. Next up, we have a team in sixth, ranked sixth. We seem to never give this team respect, even though they made the playoffs 6 years in a row. But I still stand by where we have them, because they did so little to improve this offseason. The Minnesota Wild. And they count, in our little depth charts in our season preview, the names in red, the new additions, they count the likes of Eric Fair, Matt Hendricks, JT Brown. I think Greg Pattern was probably their best addition. He's sneaky good as a shutdown guy.
Yeah,
but if that's your best addition, and we know why, because the Wild are crippled by Zach Parise's contract and Ryan Suter's contract, and in this era with those guys, they haven't been able to really add much via free agency, and they're really just locked in. They have $1 million left in cap space.
Wow.
They had to use their money on re-signing Jason Zucker and Matt Dumba.
Yeah.
And the teams around them, a lot of them are getting better. So to me, the Wild are fine. They're a reasonably competitive team.
Right, right.
But they're just kind of there.
Right.
Yeah.
They're just a team.
They're just a team.
Yeah,
they're like the London Knights used to be all those years. Just a team. You know, and I'm not sure that they're crippled by the Ryan Suter contract. I don't think they're crippled by that contract. I think he still is a guy.
He's delivered value.
He delivers value on that contract, and he'll still be a 27-minute-a-night guy. I talked to him last week. I said something about, you know, do you think now that maybe, you know, with the injury last year, that maybe this is a sign that, you're going to have to cut back a little bit. And he's like, nope, I have absolutely zero interest in doing that. No, I'm playing 27 minutes a game. Just try not to put me out there. So, I mean, and they are crippled by the Zach Parise contract, not because of anything Zach Parise did other than just wear down and get injured.
Right.
Still a good player, still a good guy, but just can't deliver because his body won't let him do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you say, I mean, this is a team that's kind of constantly been spinning its wheels anyways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of screams for bold move, right? Mm-hmm. Like you think, you know, new GM, you know, Paul Fenton comes in. He's you know, been David Poile's right-hand man. David Poile's like the big, as you call him, like Matt, the cowboy.
The cowboy, yeah.
You know, he likes to make these great big trades. And you're thinking, okay, maybe something big happens here and nothing happens. Nothing really big happens at all. So I just don't think status quo is going to cut it there. Like, it's not, this team isn't going to get better organically, you know, like from within, right? Mm. So yeah, I think we have them in the right place. I mean, the thing about Minnesota is every year they've been really good in the regular season and they haven't been able to get it done in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But now I think we're suggesting that maybe, you know, even the regular season might be a real challenge for these guys.
Yeah, and I kind of look at it like Paul Fenton inherited this machine that looks okay from the outside, but then you take the panel off and there's just like wires everywhere. Yeah. And it's like, I think the reason he hasn't done much, because he's kind of looking at it like, how do I fix this? Yeah. Like in the short term? And I'm not sure there really is an answer. You mentioned Suter, and I mean, he's had a lot of hard miles on that body. For me, guys like him and Koivu and Eric Staal, like Eric Staal had a fantastic year last season, but it's like, can he do it again?
Yeah, they're all getting to their mid-30s.
These are guys that have been in the league forever. I mean, they were always really good guys, you know, always getting big minutes. So I that just kind of worries me, and the sort of fallout from that is you have some guys knocking on the door, like Jordan Greenway, like Joel Eriksson-Ek, who haven't made an impact yet. You know, Eriksson-Ek had a pretty disappointing rookie campaign. Greenway, like, still a work in progress. You know, he's got that great big frame. You know, just, I think he needs to get a little nastier to really make that sing. But there's potential there. But where do those minutes come from when you still have the Koivus, the Stalls, the Parises out there? On the back end, I think they're okay, because, I mean, Dumba has certainly shown that he can be that top-end guy. But, yeah, just the parts, they don't seem to really fit together, and that's a problem in this division, because it is, like, just a buzzsaw.
And it's funny, because a reader was asking me this last week, what would you do with the Wild? And I said, honestly, I would consider blowing them up, which seems crazy. But what's happened is, a couple years ago, when we did our Future Watch, we felt really good about the Wild's, their youth crop. But Alex Tuk's traded to Las Vegas.
Yep.
Luke Cunnan shredded his knee last year, so he's coming back from a major injury. And like you said, Eriksson-Ek, bad rookie year. And the guy that they need most to be the really big impact player is in Russia till 2019-20. Kirill Kaprizov. They need him to be their Evgeny Kuznetsov. But by the time he comes, then Mikko Koivu is going to be 37. He might be ready to retire. So the big, major impact help isn't coming. Even though I like Greenway, it's not like Greenway is going to be a Jamie Benn level power forward in the NHL.
No.
He might be a rich man's Marcus Foligno. Or maybe a Milan Lucic. Or, you know.
Yeah.
So I just don't know if the help's coming, and I just think they're behind with the rest of this division.
Yeah.
Moving on, now we're getting to the playoff bubble teams, and the Colorado Avalanche, a team that surprised last year. Based on our ranking of fifth, we're not getting carried away with that.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is, and I really applaud Joe Sakic for this, it's the same thing with Ray Shiro. He is not getting too excited by one big season with this team, because we saw Colorado learn that lesson in 2013-14. They almost won the President's Trophy, and then they took a big step back. And the Avalanche were not aggressive this offseason at all. They're still just letting it marinate. They've got some obviously really exciting kids coming along on defense, and Cale Makar, Connor Timmins, if Timmins' concussions are going to be okay. But it seems like they're sort of a team that is okay with maybe even taking a step back in the name of a better future. What do you guys think about that idea?
Well, I mean, when you improve by, what, 47 points? from the previous year. One of the biggest improvements of all time. I mean, you're not going to see that kind of improvement again, right? There probably is going to be a natural kind of step back with this team. I think, you know, a lot of things fell into place. I mean, I think we're going to look back at that Duchene trade as the moment in time, right? Mm. As the moment in time when things turned around for this franchise and they started to, you know, get things back on a right track. You know, a good team, not a great team. Some really good talent up top. Wonder a bit about their depth at every position but goal. Mm. And I think that will be something that they'll have to address, and they'll have, you know, I mean, some of their players are going to get better, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, some of these younger guys, I mean, they're obviously going to be counting on, you know, like Kale McCarr, Connor Timmins to kind of step up, but even guys like, you know, like a JT Comfer or Tyson Jost, you know, mm-hmm. Carl Soderberg, those are the guys I think that are going to dictate how this team does. You know, their first line is going to be great. You know, their top line is going to be one of the dominant lines in the game. But I think how these guys do and where they finish and where everything fleshes out is in how some of these younger players, you know, the Kerfoots and guys like that, make that next step. And we've seen that sometimes it can really be a bit of an odyssey. It can be a bit of a stutter, you know, for some of these guys. Mm-hmm. Guys that came out and had a good first year, you know, sometimes take that step back in the second year or third year. So if that happens, then this team will probably go back to reality a little bit. But, you know, it's more about the future with this team anyways.
Yes, certainly. And there's bound to be a bit of regression, simply because, like, Alexander Kerfoot, it's funny. We talked a lot in the offseason about William Karlsson and his shooting percentage. It was tied for the best amongst NHL regulars with Alex Kerfoot.
Huh.
So can Alex Kerfoot shoot the lights out yet again like that? Well, I mean, if we're going to say William Karlsson is maybe a 30 guy instead of a 40 guy, then I think we still have the same, got to say the same thing for Alex Kerfoot, that he's probably going to regress a bit. And that's fine. I mean, pretty good for a young guy starting his NHL career. They've got that great top line with Nathan MacKinnon. I think because MacKinnon structurally changed his attack mode last year, I feel that this is Nathan MacKinnon. Like, yes, that was not like a weird, you know, heart runner-up season. This is what we are going to get out of Nathan MacKinnon now, because he has figured out how to parlay his speed into a way that makes him almost unstoppable. Mm-hmm. So you're still going to get that offense from the top line. And I think because they have that unit working so well, Mikko Rantanen, you know, just coming into his prime years, Gabriel Landeskog, still not very old himself, mm-hmm. they've got something working there. So that's great. That's going to keep them in a lot of games during the season. But yeah, as you said, Matt, like, there was not a lot of tinkering done by Joe Sakic. That was definitely the right way to go. If they miss the playoffs and get a nice little lottery pick, that's totally cool. You've got a nice foundation. Like Samuel Girard, there's another player that, right. you know, because yeah. of injury,
yeah.
Didn't get in that much time, but he's the kind of defenseman you want in the future. So I don't think this is the Avs lineup that we're necessarily going to see in a couple of years, but they're in a pretty decent place right now.
Yeah, I think they have a reasonably high floor, so I think they regress slightly maybe to being a 90-point team. But what's really encouraging about the floor, and it comes from the MacKinnon line, is it's not like, oh, the league's going to wake up and key on that line this year. They keyed right. on the line last year. The MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog trio, they face some of the hardest quality of competition, according to the advanced stats, in the league, and they still dominated. So you throw your best at them, and they still beat you. So they'll beat you again this year. But it's a depth thing, and the depth is coming. But for now, I think it's going to hold them back, especially when teams around them, particularly St. Louis, which almost beat them to the last playoff spot, improved. And we'll get to the Blues soon. But before we do the Blues, we're going to do number four, and that's the Dallas Stars. And the Stars are, to me, they have a young, obviously extremely exciting young crop of defensemen led by Miro Heiskanen. But if you look at the forward group, and Tyler Seguin doesn't have a contract yet, it still seems like this is a team in win-now mode, because their forwards are getting a little long in the tooth. Even Alexander Radulov is into his 30s now. Jason Spezza, final year of his deal. Yeah. So I sense some urgency in Dallas, especially for GM Jim Neal, because this team, they did so much last offseason to try and get back into the playoffs, and they didn't. And Martin Hanzel's deal, his back injury looks very serious, and he's not going to be ready to start the season. It kind of blew up in their face. So I feel like the Stars are one of the teams with the most pressure on them to show signs of progress. It's a matter of, will they do it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Jim Neal was so aggressive this summer in trying to get John Tavares, and still they were very much in on the Erik Karlsson, sweepstakes. And I think that's kind of the kind of move that it's going to take in Dallas, because I just see a team, like you say, Matt, that's kind of, there's really not a lot of time here to put something together. Jason Spezza, good guy, plays hard, but when he's your second line center, there's a depth issue there, So I think this is a team, like you say, it's got some good young defensemen. If Ben Bishop can be the Ben Bishop that we think he can be, they're pretty decent in goal. But this team doesn't excite me. It doesn't, I don't look at this team and go, wow, if everything falls together, this team could be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. I don't see that.
And a question, I think this is a good question for you, Ryan, is, how big is Jim Montgomery's impact going to be? Because we know Ken Hitchcock was a more defense-minded coach, but Montgomery has vowed to up the tempo. So do you think there's going to be a big influence there to really change the team's fortune?
I do, and I think the thing with Montgomery is, I was actually talking to Ben Bishop the other week, and he was saying, like, he was pretty excited. Montgomery's a young coach. This is his first NHL head coaching gig. It's a fresh voice. Bishop was talking about that, and how it's kind of cool to have this young guy coming in. And I think that you have a lot of veterans that, they want to be going in the same direction. They know that they should have been a playoff team. If Bishop didn't get hurt, that would have helped out a lot. But Ken, you're totally right about the depth. Val Nichushkin's back. What kind of impact can he have on the wing? I think Heskinen is going to be a really big X factor. Again, watching him in Traverse City just kind of confirmed all the hype. He's so smooth out there. He's so smart. I was talking to Jim Neal about him, and he was saying, like, 99% of the time he makes the right play. Like, he just doesn't make that many mistakes. And, we talked about this with Buffalo, how Rasmus Dahlin will take a lot of pressure off Rasmus Ristolainen. I could see the same thing happening with John Klingberg and Miro Heiskanen. I'm not sure if do you put them on the same pair? Do you put them on different pairs? I'm not sure. But, Heiskanen played a ton of minutes in Finland last year. Like, he did not play teenage minutes. Mm-hmm. He was at the top of the league, and he was very good. Best defenseman in the league last year, played in the Olympics, played in the World Championship. He's ready to make an impact, and I think the domino effect of having him there as, let's just call him the de facto number two behind Klingberg, I think that just frees up other guys to put themselves in better slots on that defense core. So if you get better transition game, get the puck up to Ben and Sagan, I think that makes a big difference. And I think with Montgomery, he made a point to, like, go over to Europe this summer and talk to guys face-to-face. Like, he talked to them on the phone, and he said to Jim Neal, you know what, Jim? Like, the vibe on the phone, it's not the same. Let me go over there. So he went over to Sweden, went over to Finland, talked to a bunch of those guys there. And I think it's that kind of touch that brings the guys together even before the season has begun. And I think it's going to be positive in Dallas. Mm-hmm.
And to me, I really do think that Nichushkin is an X factor, because Dallas's wing depth is, to me, that's the Achilles heel. Mm-hmm. You might move Spezza to the wing, because Radek Faksa is pretty legit. He can almost be a number two center now. He's a really good two-way center, super underrated. But you've got, you're relying on Matthias Janmark and Blake Como, And it's no disrespect to them, but we know who they are at this point in their careers. Whereas we don't necessarily know who Valanciunas is. Yeah. There could be upside left there. He was a first-round pick, so maybe he's learned something in the KHL.
See, and that's what I don't like about this team. I mean, they're too predictable and easy to shut down. I mean, they are what they were, right?
Yeah.
When you can shut down that top line, you basically have, you know, cracked the code.
Right.
To being the Dallas Stars, and I don't see anything in this lineup that leads me to believe that that's going to be any different this year.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Next up at third, and this is the team that missed the playoffs by 1 point last year. We have them back in, and I think many of us would agree this is probably the most improved team in the division for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe the conference, maybe the NHL. I think the Blues are right up there. St. Louis Blues, and again, looking at our new little depth chart, a lot of red names. You're adding Patrick Maroon to the lineup, Ryan O'Reilly and Tyler Bozak at center, David Perron brought back as well, and you have Robbie Fabry coming back after missing a year and a half.
He's an addition.
That's right, and you're probably going to get an impact rookie. I think Robert Thomas looks like the front runner to crack the lineup, and then you never know with Jordan Kyrou, Klim Kostin.
Mm.
But the Blues have so many positive things going on, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I like what they're building here because they have a nice mix. We already know their defense is pretty solid. Vince Dunn took a nice step forward last year. And the forward group is obviously, they're only 24th in offense, but they've really done a lot to try and improve that this year. They're adding veterans, but they're also adding good youth. It's going to come down to, of course, Jake Allen.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, I talked to Ryan O'Reilly last week, and he said, he just came out and he said, a Stanley Cup is possible here. Like, that's kind of the benchmark that he's setting for this team. And, you know, now that he's in a second-line role, I mean, he's clearly the second guy behind Braden Schenn. And, you know, with Tyler Bozak as your third-line guy, playing third-line minutes against third-line competition, we saw what he was able to do with that in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Robert Thomas stepping in probably as a 19-year-old, you know, in that fourth-line spot. He will be, in my opinion, the only youngster that makes this team because Doug Armstrong just does not – like, Robbie Fabry was the first 19-year-old he ever had on his team.
Mm.
And he's counting on Robert Thomas to be the second. But, yeah, like just a lot of good vibes around this team, I think. I think a lot of people really feel like the moves they made in the offseason addressed a lot of the stuff. You know, this is a team that was in – this was a team that was in first place in December, right?
Yeah.
And then Jaden Schwartz goes down, right? For whatever number of weeks with the ankle injury. You know, we were talking about this before, Ryan. It's almost like, you know, Jaden Schwartz, I mean, you know, has he gotten to the point of his career where you just say he's only playing 60 games?
Like, yeah.
You know, because it's counterintuitive to what you say. Like, you usually say, well, you can't really count on guys getting injured. But
you can almost count on Jaden Schwartz.
Almost count on him getting injured and missing, you know, 6 weeks of the season. So, you know, that'll be an X factor as well. But, you know, like you say, it comes down to goaltending. I think Jake Allen was what the Blues were last year. He was great at the beginning. And then he just got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse as the year went on.
I'll give you, these are Jake Allen's save percentages by month, okay?
Okay.
Month to month last year. 921, 891. 922, 871. 877, 916, 896.
Yeah.
Most inconsistent goaltender in the NHL.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, I think if you see Allen struggling again before the trade deadline, you got to do something.
Yeah.
Because you cannot waste so many primes that they have right now. It's funny, we haven't even talked about Vladimir Tarasenko.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was a bit quiet last year. Still a great goal scorer. You know, I mean, let's not pretend he was a fourth liner or anything like that. But I think that, you know, with the additions that they've made up front, even though Tarasenko is one of the best goal scorers in the league, I get kind of like a Wolfpack feeling about the Blues forwards now, and that's what will make them so dangerous is, okay, we got to watch out for Tarasenko. Well, okay, we also have to watch out for Jaden Schwartz. Well, okay, we also have to watch out for Patrick Maroon in front of the net. And that's where I think they'll be able to do a death by a thousand cuts kind of thing on most nights. Still have a pretty nice defense, led by Alex Pietrangelo and Colton Parayko. You know, Jay Bouwmeester can still give you some minutes. He's not the same guy he was 10 years ago, but, you know, I mean, you deploy him as you see fit, you'll be okay. The internal competition's great. I agree on that point. And I think Robert Thomas will be a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, it's all on Jake Allen because they don't have like a 1B goaltender right now.
And Jake, he's 28. Chad Johnson. And Jake Allen's 28. We can't call him a prospect anymore.
No.
28 years old.
No, he's playing in the show me state, and he better start showing people.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Random side note, Vladimir Tarasenko, the single most jacked guy in the entire NHL.
Yes.
He's huge.
Yes.
Huge.
But don't call him a tank. He doesn't like the militaristic.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember he mentioned that years ago. I was like, that's pretty poignant.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
He doesn't like the militaristic overtones.
The more you know.
Exactly.
Now we're getting to the juggernaut district, and I think the two teams at the top, these are two clear top four overall in the NHL Stanley Cup contenders. Mm-hmm. These are the Bullies, and we're going to start with number two, the Nashville Predators, the reigning President's Trophy winners. They were quiet this offseason other than adding Dan Hamhuis to make a luxury bottom pair. But they didn't really have – I mean, they won the President's Trophy, so they were the best team last year. The question is, can they get over the hump? And I think the first question we have to ask specifically about the team is about Pekka Rinne. He wins the Vezina Trophy a couple weeks after he was pulled three times in one series.
Yeah.
So can the Predators win the Stanley Cup if they keep starting Pekka Rinne?
What can they get out of the second round?
That's a great question.
Because that's what it's going to come to.
True.
Right? Because they got to get out of their own division. And the team we just happen to be picking, should I? Like,
yeah,
should I? Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, picking to win the Stanley Cup.
They're already listening.
Already in that division. Yeah. So, I mean, there are, other than the fact that Pekka Rinne is
36, I believe.
36,
37.
35.
Oh. Oh, okay. Over two. This is why you make notes before the podcast, everybody.
But his birthday is November 3rd, so, you know, he'll be
36 early in the season.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, and the fact that they still don't have, in my opinion, a true bona fide Studley Hungwell number one center. Oh man, why did I say that?
Hungwell.
They don't have a Studley number one center.
Can't spend a lot of time in the Preds room, I guess.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, there's not a lot to dislike about this team. I mean, I could see them winning the President's Trophy again. I could see them winning the Stanley Cup.
Yes,
I mean, for them, winning the Stanley Cup is—it's good. They're gonna have to get out of that. Like, getting out of their own division is the Stanley Cup almost for this team.
Yeah, really. And I think it's a valid concern as to what Pekka Rinne still has left in the tank. But I think the good thing for the Preds is Juuse Saros has already shown that he can be a legit NHL netminder. And I mean, maybe it comes down to the regular season, Juuse Saros gets like 35 starts. And when you get down the stretch, Peter Laviolette has to look at his goaltenders and say, who's hot now? You know? Because I think even though Rinne has the experience, I mean, the playoffs have been very up and down for him the past couple of years, even when they went to the final. With Saros, a bit of an unknown quantity in terms of postseason experience. So you are taking a little bit of a chance there. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, Nashville has the best defense in the NHL. They can cover a lot of mistakes. They can help out a lot. Mm-hmm. Ryan Ellis going to be back full force. You've got just so much depth. You got Phil Forsberg up front. I think they have that luxury where they can figure out their problems before the problems get too big. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, a Nashville-Winnipeg series seems inevitable once again, and it's going to be awesome.
Amazing. Again. Yeah. And to me, it's like, to summarize the biggest problem, I think, for Nashville is if you look at this list of names, okay? Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, David Pastrnak, Patrice Bergeron, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson. Which names don't fit?
Yeah, yeah.
The Predators don't have elite offensive players at forward. They have good offensive players, but both guys are established 30-goal guys. Mm-hmm. They're not 40-goal guys or 50-goal guys, whereas a lot of the other top contenders have 100-point threats, 50-goal threats. Mm. And I think that's the biggest reason why. I mean, it was goaltending, but it was also the guys putting the pucks past Pekka Rinne that were the biggest problem. Mark Scheifele was just carrying Winnipeg on his shoulders in that series. Mm-hmm. And Nashville doesn't have a Mark Scheifele either. They don't have a Wheeler. They don't have a Laine. They don't have a Scheifele. They don't. They maybe they don't have a Nikolaj Ehlers. To me, it's really going to come down to either a trade or Ilya Tolvanen, who might have that kind of ceiling. He was better at his age than Evgeny Kuznetsov in the KHL. Mm. But what do you think? Is Tolvanen the real deal? Can he handle the North American game?
I think that's a big question mark. And they're going to have to give him some reps. I think that training camp will be really crucial to see what he can do in exhibition play on the smaller ice. Because he tends to be more of a outside guy. He's not a net crashing presence. It's all about his release. I mean, his shot is wicked. So if he can get it off, if he can get into good positions, then I think you've got something there. But there's going to be a learning curve. And as exciting as he was in the KHL, not same league. It's not same style of play. It's not as fast.
And I think
it's not as physical.
Yeah.
And you have less time to make decisions in the NHL. So Nashville has the luxury of slow cooking Tolvanen because we know they're going to be one of the best teams in the league already.
Yeah.
If he has to go to Milwaukee and figure things out, they have that time. So I'm not sure if he can be that impact player this year. But fortunately, it's not a deal breaker for Nashville's chances.
Yeah, I think hitching your wagon to that happening is a bit of a dicey proposition.
Yes.
I think one of two things happens. He either plays on the top two lines and struggles and plays out of his element and learns the lessons the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
Or he, you know, plays third line minutes against third line competition and gets sheltered and puts up some pretty decent numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, not having the effect on the game that maybe you would need to have that, you know, to have that guy that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that, you know, those sort of star guys that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to expect him to do that in year one, I think is a bit rich, you know. So yeah.
It's funny, the scouting report sounds like Phil Kessel to me. Great release, plays on the perimeter, but also kind of, you know, does well in the insulated matchups. So there you go, just like in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're at number one, and we're at our Stanley Cup pick. We picked them to win the Stanley Cup 4 years ago on that cover, of course, prophesizing the 2019 Stanley Cup champions, and we're stroking our egos. We're sticking with it.
We're going all in.
Like, going all in.
There is no, like, there's no waffling. There's no nothing. We are all in with this team.
And it was a staff consensus. When we had our meeting, every single guy picked Winnipeg to win the Stanley Cup. And we think they're the most complete and star-studded and stacked team in hockey. And I think that's pretty clearly established. We know they have so much star power. So it's almost like we're better off discussing what could go wrong. Because are there any flaws? Is there any weakness that you can exploit? Is it the Josh Morrissey contract situation that could destroy Winnipeg this year? I don't know.
No. And it's not Jacob Trouba, because even if he hates it there, he's still got this year and next year there, because he's an RFA. He was an RFA this year, went to arbitration. He's an RFA next summer. He'll have to go to arbitration again. So he's going to be there for a couple of years, even if he hates it, and he'll be really good. I don't know. I guess the one thing that you might be concerned about is, what do you have in Connor Hellebuck, right? Like, you know, I mean, is he the guy that was their goalie last year and this is part of the progression and he's, you know, he's going to move on and now he's going to be a Vezina finalist for the next 10 years? Or, you know, does he regress back to being the guy that they kind of really didn't know what they had with him, you know? I guess that would be the one thing that would be a bit of a concern, because there's literally zero goaltending depth behind him, you know.
They're going young with Comrie and Brossois.
So I mean, that, you know, or an injury to him, a major injury to him, something like that, I guess, would be the fly in the ointment.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, was if Hellebuck gets hurt, then you're in some trouble. And again, it's a timing thing. If he gets hurt in November and comes back in December, who cares? But if he gets hurt in the first round of the playoffs, then you might be tanked. Otherwise, I mean, the defense core gives you so many different looks. It's so much fun, and you have so much firepower up front. Mark Scheifele, I mean, is he a sneaky heart candidate this year?
He is.
If he plays 82 games?
I'm not sure if it's sneaky.
Yeah,
he's a legit
heart candidate.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. I mean, they've got the elements. I mean, they can score. They've got
Patrick
size.
Patrick Laine we're all in agreement it's going to win the Rocket Richard Trophy.
And certainly the front runner.
And yeah. Patrick Laine, and it was his agent, Mike Liut, that pointed this out to me, actually, last week. Because people try to compare Laine and Ovechkin, but Patrick Laine has 80 career goals at the age before Ovechkin had even played an NHL game. So he's actually ahead of Ovechkin. Only this season, in year three, is he the age that Ovi was as a rookie. So Patrick Laine is the most prolific.
Because
of the lockout. If you adjust for error, you got guys like Jimmy Carson, Dale Hawerchuk, but Patrick Laine is the most prolific teenage goal scorer adjusted for error in the history of NHL hockey.
Wow.
So that just gives you an idea of how much more ceiling he could hit. He's doing this as a teen. So yes, Rocket Richard, he's got to be our pick.
Yeah, I would think so.
Right. And the thing about Hellebuck, Ken, and Ryan, you can back me up on this, I think, is because you would have studied him more during his prospect days. Mm-hmm. But to me, last year was what was expected of him. The year before was the anomaly. Mm-hmm. He was always supposed to be good. He was dominant playing with pros at the World Championship before he was even an NHLer. He was a big-time prospect.
Yeah.
So to me, last year was his coronation of what he was always supposed to be.
Yeah,
exactly.
And he is what he's showing to be, right?
Because for me last year, the only question about him was, okay, well, you've done it in the regular season. Can you do it in the playoffs? And he was good in the playoffs.
Until they all ran out of gas.
They all ran out of gas. That's fine.
And he got out-goaltended by Marc-Andre Fleury in the Western Conference Finals.
Yes.
But that is almost the tip of the cap to Fleury, who was just lights out in that series.
Exactly.
Right?
I think for Hellebuck, the fact that he showed he can win a series, that was the confirmation. It's like, okay, that we have our goal.
Right, and he won two series, that's right. What I wonder about the team a little bit is, do they have the proper replacement for Paul Stastny? Brian Little's going to be the number two center right now between Ehlers and Laine, but I'm hoping to see, during the fantasy podcast, I talked about Jack Roslovic possibly elevating to that role. He brings so much speed to a lineup that already has Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yeah.
But if Roslovic takes that step forward, it's like, my God. Then the Jets are going to have 120 points because they're already going to have 115 points.
Yeah. It's fun. They have just so many fun options.
Yeah, at this point, we're clearly just nitpicking. They're a Stanley Cup pick. They're stacked. They have no true weakness. If we're forecasting a Connor Hellebuck injury is their biggest problem,
exactly.
A guy who doesn't have injury history or problems, then obviously we're nitpicking. We love the Jets this year, and they are going to be the kings of the Central Division. That's it for this preview this week, and next up we will be doing the Metro Division. Thanks for listening, everybody.